Well, as is our custom here, we like to start on time. So good evening and welcome to the second presentation and this our 13th series of talks on Kentucky Live, Southern Culture at its Best, sponsored by the Friends of WKU Libraries. My name is Brian Kutz, and as head of the Department of Library Public Services at WKU, I coordinate this series with help from our webmaster back here taking pictures and our research instruction coordinator, Brian Carson. Ryan Dowell and Patrick Peters designed our posters, and our technical specialist tonight is Shadden Melke. Our speaker tonight is a native of Louisville, Kentucky, where he attended Catholic elementary and secondary schools. His family has roots in Hardin and Nelson counties, and growing up he was influenced by his parents, who were both teachers in New Haven and Jackson, Kentucky. He received his BA in history from Bellarmine University in 1970, an MA in history from Fisk University in 1972, and continued graduate work at the University of Michigan, receiving his PhD there in 1989. He's taught at the University of Louisville, Kentucky State University, the University of Kentucky, and Eastern Washington University in Cheney, Washington. He joined the history faculty of WKU in 1991 and has in addition served as a assistant dean to the College of Arts and Letters and assistant to the provost for diversity enhancement. He's received a number of awards and is a member of the Kentucky Oral History Commission and the African American Heritage Commission. For WKU, he teaches classes on the history of blacks and American history and the history of Africa. His scholarly interests have focused on 20th century African American history, and his first book, Onward and Upward, was the centennial history of Kentucky State University, 1886 to 1986, published in Frankfort in 1987. He followed that with 50 years of segregation, black higher education in Kentucky, 1904 to 1954, published by the University Press of Kentucky in 1997. He was a contributor to the Encyclopedia of Louisville and served as editor for Community Memories, A Glimpse of African American Life in Frankfort. A decade ago, he even served on a panel on the Confederate battle flag, America's most embattled emblem. For much of the last decade of his life, he's been consumed by editing the Kentucky African American Encyclopedia, published this summer by University Press of Kentucky, which has already won several awards. When not teaching or researching, he enjoys photography. Please give a warm welcome to John Hart. John?
Okay. Dr. Kutz, thank you. Our first, by the way, the first slide right here is the March on Frankfort, 1964, and 10,000 people were there, Peter, Paul, and Mary, Martin Luther King, Jackie Robinson, all were sort of asking the government to think about a Civil Rights Act for the state of Kentucky. So when you see this image, I think it's important to understand what that image is. And in 2014, they, in a sense, had a remembrance of that. I wanted to go, and I was sick that weekend, and I was just like pulling my hair. I couldn't make it, but I think it's important to realize what that image is. And it's in the encyclopedia, by the way. It's in the encyclopedia. First slide. What is the Kentucky African American Encyclopedia? It is very simply the most unique book in the history of African American history because it is the first in the country to be an encyclopedia of African Americans in a single state. So from this perspective, Kentucky is unique. It's going to be the role model for the rest of the country because it contains more than simply one narrative. It contains 1,155 entries, some 500 words, some 1,000 words. They go from A to Z. It is, in a sense, a book that everyone can read. It was written by any number of people. There are 150 plus writers, some African American, some white, a few who are Asian, graduate students, full professors. I'm glad to say that 10 of my Western colleagues participated and contributed entries. So It has entries from all over the state and a few out of the state who are interested in Kentucky African Americans. So it is a unique book. Most of all, it's a book, but also it is a Kindle product. If you want to go online through Amazon.com, it is a Nook product. It is a PDF, so it's digital. And by the way, it was done digitally. Everything was uploaded to a website. We reviewed it digitally. So it is a book. I still prefer that everyone read a book. By the way, books can't get hacked. All right? That's the important thing. You can have the book and then you can use it. No one can reach in and sort of make it disappear. This is why books are great for everyone to read. Next slide. Why do we need it? Some say, well, wait a minute. Aren't African Americans, aren't they Americans first and then this other? No. You need it because the first Encyclopedia of Kentucky in 1992 had a handful of entries on African Americans, very few. The second encyclopedia published by the University Press of Kentucky, called the Encyclopedia of Louisville, I had six entries in it, but it still was not enough. All right? The third encyclopedia on Kentucky, published in 2006, was the Encyclopedia of Northern Kentucky. Still, it covered 11 counties of the 120. Still, just a trickle. This is why we need this book, to pick up the other 120 counties. Now, I do want to tell you something. There are 120 counties. We have seven regions. 85 of the 120 counties are referenced in this particular book. There's lots of facts and figures contained in 624 pages. 596 of those pages are content. The rest of those pages, index, guides, reader's guides, information. It's more than just information. We had to help you to get through it. So, this is why we need this book. It has information, but it also has stories about people, places, events. Next slide. What does it cover? It goes from A to Z. It covers churches, individuals, events. It covers the good, the bad, the ugly. For example, it talks about Speedy Atkins, Charles Speedy Atkins. Well, who was he? Well, it just so happens he was a laborer. He was called Speedy because he loved to harvest tobacco quickly. Well, in 1928, he died. And they said, well, let's bury him. Mr. Hammock in Paducah had developed, a black funeral home director, developed a way of preserving the body, and it preserved his body, and it kept it in great shape. And normally when you bury somebody, you bury him, that's it. Well, this process kept Speedy in great shape for a long time. He became somewhat of a remarkable sort of display item. And he was just preserved. Flood of 1937 came along, it was washed away, but it reappeared. And he was still in great shape. So Speedy still lived, and he was on television three different times. It was amazing. Speedy Atkins, he became somewhat of a celebrity. He was more alive when dead than when he was alive. So, again, what does it cover? It covers those kinds of interesting things, but it also covers the numbers of black college presidents. Black women pilots, the first African-American licensed pilot came from Kentucky. All right? It covers war heroes, which Kentucky had, who were African-American. It covers all of these things the other encyclopedias did not address. And it covers all of these things because one of the things that's missing in the public schools is knowledge about African-Americans. One of the things I experienced being on the African American Heritage Commission, being on the Oral History Commission, being on all these state commissions in Frankfort, is that teachers say, we don't know anything about blacks. In 1970, the Human Rights Commission put out a 104-page little supplement to Kentucky history. 104 pages. Tiny. All right? Since then, I've published books. A number of scholars have published books. But the school teachers say, we don't have anything to help our kids to learn about African Americans, who constitute a significant portion of our society. And just remember, African Americans were here in Kentucky from 1774 to the present. Captain Jack Hart came when the earliest settlers in Kentucky were creating this state. So African Americans were here, but the teachers don't know this. This is why. This is why we need this particular book. Next slide. Are there people, places, and events which are important to our community, the nation, and even the world? And the answer is yes. I have a long list of things that are important to Bowling Green. The Bowling Green Academy, Zachariah Keel Jones, a graduate of State Street High School, Kentucky State Meharry Medical College, practiced medicine in Bowling Green for 62 years. He delivered 2,500 babies, of which 200 were white. Here's a black doctor from Bowling Green. Did anybody know that? We have other names. For example, also born in Bowling Green, Arthur D. Porter. He died in 1942, went to Louisville, attended Central High School, trained as an embalmer in Cincinnati. But his descendants built the largest black funeral home business in Kentucky. Where did he begin? Bowling Green. All right? There's other folks. From Glasgow, Stephen Bishop, Mammoth Cave guide. If it wasn't for Stephen Bishop, people couldn't get to Mammoth Cave. He was the one who sort of plotted all the different places. This is why we need to have this. And Oral Frances Porter, I have to say that because she was a member of my church, Taylor Chapel, born in Sugar Grove. She died in 1970, but she was the first registered nurse, black and white, to serve in Warren County, and some would say even in the state of Kentucky. She was a powerful force in the sense of just being there. She worked with white physicians. But here was an African-American woman doing something which others wouldn't think. Now, that's the community. What about the nation? Do some of these African Americans go forth and do great things? College presidents? Yes. A number of African Americans, one of them in there, and I have to get this in, my brother is in there. Why? He was a college president of Martin University. He was a Catholic priest. But guess what? He was born in Kentucky and left and became successful in Indiana. There are other people who were successful in business, the military, war heroes. Folks, there's 1,155, and I can't go through all of them tonight. All right? They're in the book. Again, you have to sort of get started. The good thing about this, and I've heard some folks tell me, well, why do I need to read each one? Because they're short. It's sort of like little novels, 1,000 little novels that are 500 words each. And each one, they're exciting. Next slide. Here's a picture of somebody. Now, does anyone know who this gentleman might be? Yes. There's a person in the audience who might know. What's his name?
John Johnson.
John Johnson. And he is from? Franklin, Kentucky. He was head of the state NAACP at the local level, state level. Now he is the executive director of the Kentucky Commission for Human Rights. He was born in Louisville, but Franklin claims him as their own. Here's somebody who is successful at both the local and national levels. He's a civil rights activist. Where was he born? Kentucky. Grew up in Franklin. And again, it's great to understand that. We need to say, well, I'm from little old Bowling Green. I'm from Franklin. I'm from Glasgow. Guess what? You can do great things if you put your mind to it. Don't say because you're from here. You can't be. You can. Next slide. This individual is an athlete. Why is he important? His name? Nate Northington. Nate Northington is very important because he was one of two people that desegregated the Southeastern Conference. He played at the University of Kentucky along with Greg Page. Greg Page, they were the first two to play for University of Kentucky, and in one practice session, Greg Page was injured. He never recovered from his injuries, and he died. His only African-American partner on that team was Nate. He struggled with that. He could not play very many games. He didn't do well. He transferred from the University of Kentucky, and he came to Western Kentucky University, where he was a standout. Now, after he graduated, he worked here in Bowling Green with the Housing Authority, and then he went on to Louisville. He's still alive. All right. So a number of these entries are of living people. So we have to look at those who were deceased and those who are alive. One of the difficulties in writing something like this, do you put the live folks or the deceased folks? With deceased folks, there is a beginning and there's an end. When folks who are alive, you say, oh, should I put that in there? What happens? Suppose they do something. We said, no. There are people, while they're alive, make contributions to the history of our state and the world. Nate Northington was one of those. He was an outstanding player for Western, but more importantly, he helped, along with Greg Page, to open the door of the Southeastern Conference. And since then, there's been quite a few African-American players in the great Southeastern Conference. And if you talk about Big Blue Nation, to some, that's more important than anything else. That's a fair assessment. Next slide. Now, Shake Rag National Register Historic District. That's in the encyclopedia. Why is that important? That is one of, I would say, two significant communities for Bowling Green and Warren County. If you sort of look closely at this map, you're going to see churches, you're going to see businesses, you're going to see a lot of things. But it's like everything else. African American communities sometimes are, how should we say, disrupted. Some scholars talk about urban renewal as Negro removal, all right? Where black communities are simply ripped apart. I would say this much about Jonesville. Jonesville's the same way. There were homes, businesses, churches in the 60s that were, in a sense, disrupted. Now, Shake Rag, there's been an effort to try to preserve as much of that as possible, but it's been tough. There are still churches there. There are still some remnants of fine homes. There are some marvelous homes. There's a whole list of beautiful homes that are still there, but it's under attack like everything else. And that's the thing to remember. Our society likes new and shiny. Old is complicated. Well, you gotta fix it up. Why do you wanna fix up that old building? It has historical significance, all right? And Shake Rag is one of those. It is a national register historic district. So that means some of those facilities can be protected and preserved. Next slide. Now here is a picture of someone not from Bowling Green. Her name is Ann Sleet. She is mayor of Perryville, Kentucky. Now, I put this in there for a reason. Her granddaughter's in my class. She's here tonight. But she is the first African-American female who is the mayor of a Kentucky town. And I think that's important. It's always good to see how African-Americans are elected officials. We've had elected officials in Kentucky who were African-American from the 1890s. Sometimes they were coroners, sometimes they were city councilmen, but nonetheless they were elected. And the good thing about that, it shows you a different side. African-Americans, despite lynchings, and there were a lot of them, and there's another incident in the encyclopedia, the Rainey Bethea execution, one of the last public hangings in Kentucky, in the nation, was in Kentucky in 1938 in Owensboro. Rainey Bethea, where people had hanging parties. The night before his lynching, people in town said, we're going to have a party. We're going to see a hanging tomorrow. Ooh. Think about that. We had to include the good, the bad, and the ugly. And the New York Times covered it and said, ooh, this does not sound good. These people are having a party about someone being executed with a hanging. And after that, Kentucky said, well, from now on, if we're going to execute people convicted of heinous crimes, we'll do it behind closed doors at Eddyville in far western Kentucky. So, she represents one of the good things we need to remember. Here is an African-American woman being elected. And, of course, there's another story to that. The whole Sleet family, Monita Sleet from Kentucky State, another family member, won a Pulitzer Prize for photography. That whole family is... See, and that's another thing, too. African-American families are not uniform. They do a lot of things. And in Kentucky, it's a challenge. We're spread across the state. We're not in every county. Again, as I said, 85 of 120 counties are referenced, which means not every county had African Americans. All right? Kentucky is a peculiar state. We are one of, I think we're the second largest number of counties in the country for a state. 120 is a lot. Okay. Next slide. It's the last slide. It's called questions, see? And I tried to keep this short for one purpose. We've done this at a number of places, from Louisville Muhammad Ali Center to Indianapolis at the Eastern Kentucky Social Club. We've had them on campus. I've done a number of these. And what most people want to know is, I've got a question. Can you answer a question? So I'm going to cease and desist and open the floor to questions. And I will try to answer them. And if some of you have better, can help me, I'd appreciate it. Questions? Yes?
How did you feel growing up and going to the Catholic school as you studied history? Did you realize then the great deficit in what you were learning? Or
it took me a while to really understand that, because growing up in a Catholic household, you simply didn't ask those questions. Actually, it wasn't until I went to college at Bellarmine, and we had someone who, in a sense, used the book, which is the standard, From Slavery to Freedom, and the instructor was a white female who was sort of intrigued with John Hope Franklin. And I did meet John Hope Franklin. In 1948, wrote a book called From Slavery to Freedom. And it explained a lot of things which I was not aware of. I listened to my father, who is a Kentucky State University grad, along with my mom. They graduated in the class of 1929. They came from an HBCU experience. And they told me some things that I didn't understand until I went to one and worked at one for 10 years. And then I had a degree from Fisk, which is also an HCBU, an HBCU, a historically black college and university. So how did that impact me? Catholic upbringing, in a sense, taught me to follow the line. But more importantly, coming out of Bellarmine, I sort of learned a few things. You had to think. You had to inquire. You had to ask. And one of the things we want to do with this volume, the three general editors who are native African Americans to Kentucky, we want people to ask the questions. In some interviews, I said, this is not the end. And there was an interview in the Courier Journal, and I said, this is not the end. This is the beginning. One of the goals that the three general editors, Gerald Smith, Karen Cotton McDaniel, and John Harden, want to do, we want to jumpstart the research agenda. We don't want this to be the final book. Now, there won't be another. This particular book, by the way, was the result of $400,000 in donations from all across the state, 16 staff members, the 151 writers, 10 years of hard work, starting being invited by the University Press of Kentucky to write this thing. And it was a struggle. We traveled across the state. We traveled to Eastern Kentucky. We traveled to Paducah. We traveled to Louisville. We traveled to all these different parts of the state to get additional sources. We went to cemeteries and took pictures. All right? Because cemeteries sometimes reveal a lot. Death certificates in cemeteries, I found, are perhaps one key to getting the life of someone. If you've ever seen a death certificate, it tells you everything. Who your parents were, what you died from, almost what you did. On one particular sheet, a death certificate is powerful. So we did all of this. Now, back to your original question. Catholic upbringing, it helped me to strengthen myself, but then I had to move beyond simply that. I had to become an eager student, always willing to learn, always willing to take in more, always willing to ask that question. And I would ask a lot of questions. I interviewed Lyman Johnson before he died. I interviewed colleagues. I kept asking questions. Well, why did this happen? Well, what do you know? In certain parts of the state, there's a very famous historian by the name of Henry Ellis Cheney, who is now deceased. But he was at Kentucky State. He was considered the dean of historians from 1936 to 1982. He trained generations of college students at Kentucky State University, and he taught at Eastern Kentucky, and he was also respected by colleagues at the University of Kentucky. I said, I'm going to be like him when I grow up. All right? I'm not him, because he went through different things. We both share one thing in common, University of Michigan. But we both shared a desire to understand the complexity of what is Kentucky and African Americans in Kentucky. Did I answer your question?
Well, what I was trying to get at was when you were studying in school, secondary school, did you realize you weren't getting the whole story of the history?
Well, that's when I decided to focus on history, yes. But in order to focus on that, I had to be grounded firmly in the historical discipline. It means you have to know American history. I had one professor who said you couldn't understand the history of Africa without understanding the history of Europe. You couldn't understand African Americans without understanding American history. Putting it in the correct context, I couldn't understand the history of Bowling Green without understanding the history of Kentucky and the United States. Little plug here, the African American Museum Bowling Green area is now open. We've been functioning since 2012. I had to get that in. So if you see that sign on the roundabout, African American Museum Bowling Green area, we're struggling. We would appreciate your support. Did I do okay? Okay. Yes?
The interviews that you did you record them? And if so, are they archived?
The interviews that were recorded and the files, there are files stored in the Margaret I. King Library at the University of Kentucky. All of those materials have now been archived. Each entry has its own separate file with all of the documentation, Ancestry.com material, materials copied from other resources like the Schomburg Library in New York and other places. They are on file in the King Library. There is a collection. So they just didn't disappear. 10 years worth of work, thousands of dollars, all of that work didn't just simply be tossed. Because we hope and expect that some other folks, master's theses, doctoral dissertations, and simple information can now be utilized through the King Library to the archives at UK. Now, it was always going to be a question. How do you get to those? You're going to have to go right now to the University of Kentucky. But I suspect, given the way things are going, eventually some of those materials will be made available in other formats. The one good thing about this, at least by being digital, you can access it in different forms and different ways, at least the narrative piece in the book. But the research piece, these are summaries, because a lot of this was edited. Each of the three general editors, plus the 15 topical editors, and the associate editors, we went through every entry, every single word. It was edited three times by us, another time by the press, and it's been vetted quite a bit. So those materials were preserved.
Good. Because it's so great with some of the people who passed away.
Yep.
In the course of the 10 years, their words will live on.
What's even more interesting, the person who wrote the entry on Muhammad Ali, Dr. Blaine Hudson, passed away. But guess what? He has an entry in there because even though he's a writer, he was so significant because he was a young man who sat in the dean's office at the University of Louisville, went through, got out of that, eventually earned his doctorate, and became the dean. And the University of Louisville named the Saturday Academy after J. Blaine Hudson. So he's both a writer and an entry. That's sort of unique. That someone who submitted also became an entry himself. He was just that good. Yes, sir?
Dr. Hart, earlier you made a key point about the fact that there's not enough African American history in the school systems.
Mm-hmm.
Have you thought about how we might get this book into the school systems because of this importance?
One of the challenges we've been trying, and I'm working with Dr. Smith and others, to encourage the State Department of Education to promote this, particularly in terms of how they set up their curriculum. In Louisville, some of the public libraries, like for example, Nelson County bought two copies. All right? They didn't buy one, they bought two. And my goal is to, with whenever the African American Heritage Commission meets, and we suggest that to other state agencies, that the Department of Education, now that there's a new executive director, this is something school districts can afford to purchase at least one copy for each school. All right? It's not expensive, but it's a reference book. It will probably be the only one. The last time something came close to this was called Men of Mark, Eminent Progressive and Rising in 1887. And you had to buy that on your own. All right? And it looked at, it had little snapshots of black men. All right? And it sort of disappeared. People don't even know it exists. It's a rare book. This is a little bit different. Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, University Press of Kentucky. We hope that this will, in a sense, get in the ether. Now, we're glad Barnes & Noble has copies today, because you can touch it, all right? But the school districts are a little bit different. It's going to take an effort to knock on the door and tell the school districts, this is here. It's been publicized. Nationally, it's gone out across the web. I think, Brian, you mentioned an award that we're going to receive from the State Historic Archives. That's on October 29th. That's another award. It already is, if you'll notice, there's a little thing that says Thomas Clark Medallion Book. University Press of Kentucky awards Clark Medallion. Thomas Dionysius Clark was the founder of the University Press of Kentucky. He was the chair of the University of Kentucky Department of History. He helped to establish University Press. And every year they give an award for the best book on Kentucky history in a given year that they published. Before he died, I met with him along with the other editors, and he said this was a great project. All right? He died in 2005. He knew that this was coming, but he didn't live to see it. So he said it was a good idea. And we hope that since it's getting these awards, and so far we have not had any negative reviews, there's always naysayers, we hope that the schools will take it to their heart and at least put it in each school library so that teachers will now have a ready document so that they can integrate that in their teaching of Kentucky history and American history. So thank you, Rick. That was an excellent question. Yes, sir. Hey, Brian.
I've had twice now over the past couple of years, I've heard people from, one from Morgantown and one from Franklin, who were white, say that when they were kids, they really didn't realize the extent of the segregation that was there. And I, about 7 or 8 years ago, I saw an interview with Julian Bond in which he said something to the effect of, well, but, you know, Kentucky wasn't bad, wasn't too bad. But, you know, if you look at it, it was pretty bad. And the two people who said they didn't realize we were kids are saying, both of them have said to me, as adults, they realize how segregated the society was. So I think that there's this belief that Kentucky is somehow different, or, you know, we're not Mississippi type thing.
Well, again, some of that comes from the whole notion that segregation, racism, and oppression is relative. If you are the oppressed, it's bad. If you are the oppressor, things are fine. All right? It's perfectly good. I don't feel any pain. But if you're the one who is the victim or oppressed, it's very bad. All right? And that brings up another issue. Why were African Americans, many of them, leaving the state? I had family, I had other family members, they left. They went to Ohio, which wasn't that great either. Ohio had black laws. Indiana, it had Ku Klux Klan as a governor, all right? So if you go north, it wasn't much better. So it's all relative. You need to look at all the context in which people say that. If you're African American, the only place that was better, it was south of the Canadian, the south of the Canadian border was south, all right? That was south, all right? At times. times Canada had its problems too. There was racism in Canada. So it's perception. It's really perception. If you're in the skin, all right, I used to say, if you got the skin, you understand. That's the only way you can know. But if you're not, then it's problematic. You sort of think, okay, well, things aren't really... If you read the narrative of the members of Congress, my colored people say things are real nice to them. They don't rebel. They're real nice colored folks. Except when colored folks get lynched and abused, then there's a problem. So, Brian, I think that perception comes from who you are, when you are, and living. And every now and then, to quote John Howard Griffin, who darkened his skin, he discovered being black like me isn't fun.
Yes.
That's a nice little book to read.
Yes.
All right? Black Like Me in Grace Halsell's book, where she did it too. She darkened her skin and figured out being black is not great fun under segregation. All right?
What are some of the unique problems of collecting information about African Americans that it might be different from Caucasians? Paucity of information, fewer photographs. What's some of the challenges?
The significance is that older interviewees, and remember I'm on the Oral History Commission, when you interview older individuals who are African American, they want to know, why you got that microphone? What you going to do with it? Where's this information going? Who are you going to give it to? Are you going to give it to somebody in town to make my life miserable? There is a reluctance for older African Americans. They don't know what you're going to do with that information. All right? Also, in certain instances, it wasn't always wise to tell white folks what you're doing because they'll take it away from you. There have been any number of cases where African American business people lost their homes, their businesses, because someone did too much of this. And then very powerful white males. I have to say it. Those of you in my class know I make a distinction. White males control power. All right? Very rich white males. They control power over poor white males, poor white females, black males, and black females. Very rich white males want to control everything. And they don't care who they abuse. If you are a person of color with wealth, you might think you have it, it can be taken away from you. And there have been any number of cases where that happened. A person owned property and land. Oops, you owe some taxes. Well, I didn't know. Well, our records say you owe X amount of taxes. You better pay this taxes, boy, or we're going to snatch it from you. And they did. So, the problems are interviewing people, having a rapport with the interviewee. We were interviewing, I know, we went to Eastern Kentucky, and Lynch and Benham. We interviewed some folks who came there. The coal companies invited African Americans to work in the coal mines, all right? And we finally, after a while, we sort of talked, Gerald Smith and myself, we went down there, we interviewed them, and after a while we talked to them and they sort of warmed up and said, okay, you're a pastor. Professor Smith, by the way, Gerald Smith, one of the general editors, is the pastor of Pilgrim Baptist Church, as well as a full professor at the University of Kentucky. So he had that connection of being a Baptist minister and historian. So he was able to work that. And they eventually warmed up and they started to tell the stories. And I've had to do the same thing. I have to listen and to be patient with seniors. They want to get to know who you are and who are you people? Where are you from? What you gonna do with this, boy? I'm older than you. All right? I said, yes, ma'am. All right, you got to be respectful of the elders. One thing in the black community, you have to be respectful of the elders. You can't just assume because they are seasoned that they don't know anything. They haven't survived for 80 and 90 years without being smart. They have something called mother wit, intelligence. It's not about a degree, it's about common sense. Does that help?
Yes.
Other questions?
At the back here, Joe?
Yes.
Do you or anybody else involved with the book have any plans to expand into other states, like maybe Tennessee or Indiana?
Well, let's put it this way. If we can get someone in those other states with $500,000 and a staff and they know enough of the where the sources are located and want to go through this again and get a university press to come up with it, we can give them guidance and point them in the right direction. You have to remember that this was the result of African Americans, white Americans, donors, Tubby Smith Foundation giving money, some very notable people in Lexington contributing money, University of Louisville, Western gave me some support. It sort of depends on the commitment of those states. Other states have encyclopedias that are online. Alabama's one online. Some other states, Georgia has one online. The difference is, this is what? Book. It's expensive. Everything you see about it costs a lot of money. The cover costs money to produce. And this is, honestly, and I'm not trying to hustle the book. These kinds of books are about $200 a pop. Correct?
Yeah.
The list price is $49.95. The intent was to keep it affordable so that the average person could purchase it and read it and share with other people. If those states come up with that kind of commitment, great. We can help them. But they have to have the commitment. They know where the other materials are. They know where the right names are. It's always difficult when a foreigner from another state comes into your state and tries to tell you about your history. All right? Those other states, Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, the Carolinas, North and South, they're older than Kentucky. North Carolina, the Four Corners of Law, goes back to the 1600s. We only go to 200. They've got twice the amount of history. And yes, there's a lot there. They're going to have to be willing to commit some funds to do this the right way. This is why it took so long. Someone didn't ask this question. In December of 2003, the University Press of Kentucky came to me when I was still in the dean's office and said, "We've got some other people working on a project. Would you like to do it?" Stephen Wren was the executive director at the time, and he said, "Would you want to work on this project?" And I said, "Okay." It took the three of us working on the proposal another 5 years to get this proposal together. Then we finally launched in 2008 at the University of Kentucky Library. The president of the university was there. We had a big, big deal. We launched it in 2008 to start the writing. 2008 to 2013, we did the writing. It took another 2 years to get it in this shape. All right? To do it right takes time, money, commitment, energy, spouses being very generous with their time. I have to say that. I have to give much praise to spouses and families. You know, we were so like, "Who are you? You've been gone doing research." But that's an excellent question. The question is, those states have to be willing to commit to do it right and then to share it. And all too often, people today want what? Money. And lots of it. And credit and everything else. So I wish the entire South could do that. Now, there's something called, I think, the Encyclopedia of the South. And it's hit or miss, though. It's the South. And the states are sort of all over. This is focused on Kentucky. It's focused on Kentucky primarily. Kentuckians, people who came to Kentucky, people who, and I've asked this question in some of my classes, and I got to watch the time, I don't want to hold people up. What makes a Kentuckian? If you come here, you live here, you claim this piece of earth as yours, you're a Kentuckian. If you're born here and you leave, you're still a Kentuckian. You were born here. You just left. We always come back. We're sort of like bad pennies. We keep coming back.
One more question? Yes.
What would you say personally was the hardest part of this for you personally? Was there an interview or anything that stuck out to you as the hardest thing you've done?
Well, the hardest part was, in a sense, constantly trying to keep in touch with the editors and working with people, because there were times when, at the very end, we had a deadline to get it done. The hardest part was being focused and committed and saying, this is a project. I would call this my second dissertation. The PhD, anyone, if you've ever done one, it's like a bad relative who comes to live in your house and you wish they would go away. All right? But this was a good relative. But it's the challenge of getting it done and then saying, thank the Lord, it is now finished. It is finished. That was the hardest part, of constantly working to get it done. And that was the real challenge. Yes?
So of all the entries, if you had to pick one, what would be your favorite? If you had to tell one to represent sort of Kentucky to your peers, which one would you pick?
Well, that I'm biased with one because he was relative. Okay, I didn't write that one. Someone else wrote it. And that was my brother's. But if I had one, well, then I'm going to have to. It's sort of like picking out the which one of your relatives. I don't know. I'm going to leave it at that. I'm going to say the one that's closest to me is my brother's. He was my oldest brother. He knew I was working on it, and he passed away a few years ago. He had a stroke. But the point was that it says, here's something to leave behind for everyone else. It's complicated because each one is sort of different. There's schools, there's writers, there's people. But when you have family members, I have a brother and a cousin in there, Gary Payne, who was a judge in Lexington. He's a retired judge. So when you see family in there, that's going to be the ones that are closest to you. Those were the two.
We've had a lot of questions already in the book about this famous musical performer from Bowling Green who achieves fame in Europe. Can you say a bit about him?
Ernest Hogan. I'm not going to mention the name of his song about something, all people look alike. I won't drop the word that he used. And there is an historical marker on him, Reuben Krause, Ernest Hogan. Some considered him one of the major contributors to ragtime. If you're going down Kentucky Street, right next to the Railroad Museum, you'll see that historical marker. All right? He's a fascinating character, and I remember reading one piece on how later in life he regretted his famous song about how all blank look alike. Now, I'm going to leave that blank. I'll let you fill in that word. But he's from Bowling Green. He's not the. But there are other African Americans from Bowling Green who are successful judges. Benjamin Shaw left here, went to Louisville, became a federal district judge. The athletes in this area, Jim McDaniel. Everyone heard of him, Big Jim. There's all kinds of different individuals who came from this area, became successful. Some became, well, notable and notorious. Both ways. And like I said, I'm to get into Reuben Krause, Ernest Hogan, he's interesting, and I think you really have to sort of look at that historical marker and sort of read his entry as well, because he's a lot more complicated. Because when he was buried here in town, it was the largest funeral of any African American in 1910. And I think he was buried at the Colored Methodist Church at the time. Which some of us might know in town, it's where I went to church at the time. So, sort of interesting. All right. Another question.
Okay. I'm a substitute teacher, and the month of Black American, I was calling, and I was reading to the children's third grade, and they said, Miss Rob, we don't understand what you're talking about, slaves. These were the white children.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't understand it. They said, slaves? Who was slaves? And I said, you've never heard about it. They said, no. And all the kids were just all staring at me. And he said, who had the slaves? I said, no. White people had the black people. White people had black people as slaves? Why did they do that, Miss Ray? Okay. I said, okay. Said, you know what? And I said, well, he said, it's getting ready to be more slaves. What are you talking about? So we got a black president. They're going to take all of us white people as slaves.
That was good. And there is a section on slavery in here, but we talk about it.
Maybe on that note, that might be our
segue
to call this to close. I'm sure you'll want to join with me in especially thanking our speaker for not only for his hard work on this.